folks, and welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima McGinn, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Native Shark, which is an online platform for learning Japanese. And what Native Shark do is they make learning Japanese really, really simple. You log in, you click a button that says study now, and the platform then shows you exactly what you need to learn next based on your previous progress. Now, again, this is simple, but the way it's designed means that students who use Native Shark once a day for 4 to 5 months can complete the equivalent of over 2 years of university study. And this is not just them patting themselves on the back. Now that Native Shark's been in business for over a year, the results are in. So this is exactly what people are saying. Just looking at a couple of posts in their community forums, and the student community, by the way, is one of the best things about the platform. So one person's writing, most productive year I've had learning Japanese. And then another one says, I've started learning over a year ago with all of these other platforms, and what I learned there is only a fraction of what I've learned on Native Shark in just 3 months. And then yet another one goes, in my mind, my study timeline only started with Native Shark because that's when I really started learning consistently, and on and on. So yet the proof's in the pudding. It's definitely the best online course out there. And since you've heard about it here on the podcast, you also get an extra little bonus. If you sign up for their free trial using the URL nativeshark.com/NTI, and we'll link to it in this episode's show notes. So that's native without an E. So N-A-T-I-V shark, all one word, .com/NTI. You use that link to sign up and you'll get a double length free trial. So 2 weeks free instead of just the one. No need to put in your credit card or anything of that sort. You can just sign up, give it a shot. And chances are at the end of these 2 weeks, you'll already be far ahead of wherever you are with your Japanese at the moment, whether you're just starting out or you're already in knee deep. Give it a shot. nativeshark.com/NTI. All right. So we're back with the Japan Real Estate Experts panel today, JREP, or rather the panel minus one member, our Akiya Ninaka expert, Matt Ketchum, couldn't join us as he was apparently dealing with some rotten scoundrel thieving monkeys out in the countryside somewhere. We'll chat about that a bit. We'll also give you one last heads up on our business networking and gaming event that's taking place in a few days if you're tuning in before December 10th. We are going to do a quick recap of the Retire Japan first online conference, which took place a couple of weeks ago. And then we're going to go right into a pretty long conversation about COVID, quarantine accommodation, short-term stays, Airbnb, and how to maximize their profits, not just in Japan, but all around the world. Domestic travel, lifestyle investments, management companies and their availability. Probably one of the more casual off-topic sessions we've had to date, and a whole lot of fun. So one little housekeeping announcement before that. We're soon going to have an open spot for our top of the episode sponsorship slot again, the one that's currently occupied by Native Shark, which you've just heard about. So if you've got any product or service or project that you'd like to promote to English speakers living in, doing business with, or interested in Japan, feel free to reach out to us either in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode or via email on info@nippontradings.com. We'd be more than happy to discuss an advertising spot on the podcast with you. Prices are still very affordable, a lot less than what you'd expect it would cost, I'm guessing. And we can put you in front of, or rather inside the ear of our 20 or 25,000 annual listeners here on the Japan Real Estate Podcast. All right, so without further ado, here's the Japan Real Estate Experts panel, JREP, or rather three quarters of the panel, talking about, well, lots of things. Enjoy, and I'll see you again on the other side.
Got it. Hey, good afternoon, guys, again. shall we get into it? A little introductions. I think we've been working.
Sure. We're only three today, aren't we? We're not four.
Yes. Yeah, we're missing a good friend, Matt, Akiya in Inaka, the other half. But let's, Tracy, why don't you start with your little... Well, you guys, your names, usually on your names, you have like, Tokyo based real estate agent. That's me. I'll start off.
You can start. I'm going to set
anyone. So anyone who is looking to buy a house in Tokyo, I'm a real estate agent. I help foreign families and generally local residents buy their home in Tokyo. We also arrange financing. We have the, we're a licensed agent, so we have the loan officers assigned to our agency. So any questions about financing and stuff like that, I'm your guy. Ziv.
Yeah, Ziv Nakajima again. We do investment properties, holiday homes, land for development, commercial properties, anything regardless of what kind of real estate it is. So we represent people who are dealing in real estate in Japan, and mostly we represent people who are not hands-on. So either remote investors who are living overseas, or people who live here but just don't have the time or the bandwidth or the language skills or the inclination to deal with it themselves, or just need consultation along the way. So that's what we're there for. Tracy.
Yes, so I am the short-term rental / minpaku professional. So I've been running short-term rentals for 10 years. So I have my own properties. I also rent from investors, or I co-host. So I do profit shares with people who own properties, and I can help maximize revenues from properties in Tokyo, but also I can help outside of Tokyo by advising the best way to set up a business and maximize the profits from short-term rentals. That's me. I love me some profit. So.
Cool. I will kick it off. I got this.
Rubik's Cube.
Yes, yeah. Rubik's Cube. It's on. There we go. Rubik's Cube. It was a present from my brother-in-law to my kids. It's one of the connected ones. So it's a Bluetooth, connects to your phone, and there's an app, and it teaches you how to do it.
I need one of those. I never could get past a single side.
Yeah, likewise. So basically in a day and a half of playing around with it, I can now do it in about 5 minutes after 40 years of sort of considering trying to figure it out. 30 years, I guess, since I was a little kid. trying to figure it out, finally able to do it in a day and a half, and it's pretty straightforward, pretty easy.
Okay, Christmas is coming up. That looks like it's a gift for my little guy.
But let him try it. Yeah. Let him try it on his own first. Like the app only comes in after you fail, right?
Oh, there you go. Try not to get the.
Oh well,
there you go. It's Rubik's Connected. It's made by GoCube, and Rubik's Connected. The reason I bring this up is because Ziv, I want to hear about what you're doing with your. This channel's a bit about soft promotion. I'm generally real estate related stuff, but you have a board game. I was never into board games, so apart from Monopoly, and my brother always cheated and beat me. But tell us about this board game event you have, networking board game event sort of you have coming up.
It's actually shaping up to be kind of the real estate event. We've got at least three real estate professionals that I'm aware of who are turning up. But what it is it's not just board games. So it's basically a physical, so not a virtual, which is a rarity these days, but it's a physical networking, socializing and networking event where people will get together at the lovely Montan Hakata Hotel in Fukuoka. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be basically doing whatever you do when you go to a business networking event. So we're going to be getting to know each other, telling each other about our businesses and our business interests. And we're going to be doing brainstorming. If someone's got a business idea, is going to run it by the attendees and the speakers and so forth. But the unusual, I guess, the unique factor to it is that instead of doing like silly, because it's a 3-day event, right? Like if you go to a normal business networking event that's like over a few hours on the evening or during the day, you basically have your little icebreakers. You wander around, you chat to a few people, you exchange business cards, might be a speaker, and it's kind of it's short enough to be comfortable, but if it goes beyond a few hours, it's usually a bit awkward. Like you stick to your cliques, or you get little groups and you talk to the people that you know. So what we're doing here is instead of having an itinerary and the socializing exercises or icebreakers, we're just going to be playing games. So board games, card games, that's just nothing that quite brings people together, like, sitting around the table and learning the rules to a new game. And we got all levels. Like we got simple little icebreaker party games, card games, like Uno style, exploding kittens, all sorts of stuff where people just go at each other and have fun. And we're going to have more medium complexity games that work on like puzzle solving, problem solving skills, resource management, risk management sort of thing. So a lot of stuff that actually translates very well into business arenas. And for the hardcore gamers who are probably going to be up late, we're using we got the hotel, not to ourselves, but the public areas and the conference rooms are ours. So we're going to be able to use them every day until about midnight. So hardcore gamers will probably stay up late and go hardcore thematic games, aliens and zombies and strategic war games and so forth. But it's a real mix. So we're getting a lot of business people who sort of want to unleash their inner geek and get to know other people and get to play some games. And we have quite a few gamers who've got business ideas and would like to maybe test them out in a business setting. And speakers wise, we've got Jason Ball, who's probably familiar to expats in Japan. Yeah, the king of networking. So Jason's got Jason's the owner and admin of the Business in Japan online community, which is now about 70,000 members, I think. So the biggest networking, English language networking community in Japan. And he's going to be talking to us about how to establish business relationships in Japan, how to properly network, which is a little bit different in Japan as what we used to overseas. And he's going to be talking to us about the challenges that foreigners face when they're trying to do business with the Japanese for the first time, and vice versa. A lot of challenges that Japanese people need to wrap their heads around when they're doing business with foreigners for the first time. And we're going to have Mario Long, who is co-founder and CEO of Sakura Phoenix, which is a company that helps children learn about business by setting up business and pursuing their dreams and putting ideas into practice. And he's actually, together with his son, he's actually, as a test case, he's actually designed and marketed and crowdfunded a board game, which kind of ties into the whole theme of the event. So he's going to be talking to us a little bit about that. And myself going to be talking about my favorite game, which is real estate investment, obviously. So looks like good fun. Well, 3 days. And none of you are coming. I can't believe it that none of you
are coming. Well, how many people are going?
At the moment, we've got, there's going to be 12 or 15 of us that are there for the weekend, but a lot of people that are going to be coming in for a single day attendance on Saturday and Sunday mostly. Some of us will be coming in from since Friday, so staying for the weekend, and a lot of people just popping in for a day at a time. So we got ticket options are single day attendance, 2 day attendance, 3 day attendance, with a room, without a room, with meals, without meals. We've got all options out there.
Yeah, it's just hard to decide because, you know, with small children, it's hard to get away. So
your kids kind of babysit themselves, right? You can let them loose in Fukuoka City.
My 11-year-old?
Okay, maybe around the hotel, maybe.
Yeah. Around the hotel. Well, if he's got a screen, he's happy, right? So yeah.
Mine are 8, 6, and 4. So
yeah, yours are too little.
And the weekends are just like, well, no one has free, they don't have personal time. The weekends are just full with kids' activities. Soccer club, the soccer, basketball, jujitsu, rhythmic gymnastics, regular gymnastics. Jesus Christ. Yeah, it's unbelievable. I'm like, I've missed up. What was it? There's
kids who'd have
marathons. Yeah, yeah. There's
my son does karate twice a week, and I'm not going beyond that. Like, I am not putting in my weekends for soccer and baseball and basketball, driving around the country and doing camps and preparing sandwiches. No, thank you.
Yeah.
No. My kid catches the train on his own. It's just like fine now. So, or he rides his bike. So
that's spirit. But yeah, next event, Sam, we have gotten a lot of feedback that a lot of Tokyo people, we do have a few people from Tokyo and Osaka, but a lot more of them wanted to come, and they just really prefer it was if it was in Tokyo. So next year's event is probably going to be in Tokyo.
Yeah, well, but you know, what about sort of like, you know, there's so many remote places, like Inaka places, actually, I wish Matt was here. So, but there are a lot of really good options that are in the countryside for running off sites and that are all set up for, you know, that you really don't really see as a foreigner unless you're sort of connected in that world.
We were looking at quite a few of those, but I guess because they're minpaku, they're not a hotel, right? So they really need to get their registrations booked and paid, or at least half paid in advance. And because this is the first event, we just didn't want to commit to a few thousand bucks before we actually knew how many people are coming. And with the hotels, as you probably know, hotels in Japan are pretty lenient. Like you can make a booking reservation and only pay them 2 days in advance, even if it's for a group.
Right now they are too with the borders closed. Right now they're hurting. So
having said that, they've run out of twin rooms already. Like they said they're really sorry, but if anybody else books a twin room, they're going to put them in two singles, or they might put them in a four bedroom, which I guess the twins wouldn't mind. But yeah, they are filling up. I think with the obviously we've got the whole border thing going and there's a new variant and so forth, but domestically it's pretty laid back at the moment. People are definitely traveling a lot more and the go-to campaigns come back and then they're slowly getting booked out. So domestically it's happening here.
And it's also something for anyone watching this video. Fukuoka is really a happening place. It's like, I always, Tokyo's great. I think, if you're coming for a trip to Tokyo, you obviously have to come here, but there are so many more places outside the Golden Triangle, the Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka. I mean, it's like Fukuoka is a really good place to go as a visitor. Nagasaki is amazing. Mm-hmm. My goal is, while I live here, is to try and hit every single prefecture. So I'm doing pretty well. I've sort of hit 80% so far. So I haven't sort of, I've still got a couple of places around, that west side of Osaka, along that Sea of Japan side. So Tottori I haven't been to and some of those other places. But I don't know what's out there. So if anyone can enlighten me by sending me a message and tell me what's really good to see out there, I'm up for it.
We need Matt for that.
We do need Matt for that, yes.
He's not at feeding goats today, feeding monkeys maybe, I'm not sure.
Well, we can talk about him because he's not here. I mean, I had said to him, I've got questions. I have questions. He's saying that he's in an Inaka place where next door is an Akia, right? It's empty, but there's monkeys that are squatting. And he's seen them going in and out. It's just like, but my questions are, do monkeys set up like a sort of domestic situation? Do they have bedrooms? Do they?
Are they looking to invest?
Are they paying the rent and are they invested? Yeah.
Right. And they've been stealing his sandals. Like, what are they doing with his sandals? Like, they're stealing his sandals from outside his front door. It's like, okay, well, what are they doing with your scent? Are you wearing them? What are they doing?
These are like crows, I think. They steal anything that, looks mildly interesting. They just pick it up and go.
Yeah. So, obviously something to think about when you visit, especially in Inaka areas, is like the wild boar and the wild monkeys. So, yeah, never a dull day.
For the rattlesnakes, they're out there.
Rattlesnakes? There are no rattlesnakes.
Not rattlesnake. What do you call them? Mushishi?
Like the mukade?
No. It's a snake. It's a poison. It's a venomous snake. It'll kill you. I forgot the name though. They're pretty popular in the long grass.
You had me at snake. I see a little wiggle in the grass. I'm out. I'm gone.
Yep. Same.
Come on. We've all spent time in Australia. It's like all the wildlife there will kill us. But I saw a snake up in Iwate just a couple of weeks ago, and when I was hiking up there, looking at Akia. I saw a snake and I just, with the training of growing up in Australia, you just stop, right? Yeah. You don't move forward. It's like, oh, there's a snake. I'll go away. And they're more afraid of me than they are.
Anyone, I was just listening to a podcast about that. Anyone that's ever been attacked by a wild animal is most likely their fault.
Yeah.
YouTube proves that time and time again.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So get out of your vehicle during a nature, like doing a safari. To pat a lion, the supposed lion.
Just to summarize on the event, if you are happening to be watching this before the 10th of December, or rather before the 8th of December, because that's the end of the booking date for us, flights to Fukuoka are really cheap at the moment. I think they're about 15,000 yen, so about 100 and a bit dollars. Come down for the weekend. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And we'll link to the event in this episode's show notes and so forth.
In the show notes, like and subscribe.
Is that what you wanted to ask me, Neil, just about the event?
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you, because, again, the games and stuff like that. And I know, you had something going on and that seemed like a very relevant event.
Yes, thank you.
To sort of talk about. The other thing I want to ask you is a real estate event that's just passed. I think it was on Tuesday. So who is it? Ben Tanaka at Retire Japan.
Yep.
I think that Retire Japan, very, very great Facebook group, excellent forum. It's just a wealth of information for anyone who wants to know anything about NISA and Iveco, investment stuff in Japan. I bought his books maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I think like 2000 yen each, his ebooks, and I was trying to figure out about NISA and Iveco, just started like checking different websites and looking at different information, and it was just like all over the place. And so I'm like, okay, his books, so just download it, and for like, you know, 2000 yen a book.
In English, understand, they're probably clearly the only source, right?
Yeah, right. Definitely, like, you can try to get some versions of it, but what it actually means, how it applies and stuff. His book, so it's just like, it's just a great summary of how it, well, actually more than a summary, just like great sort of in-depth details about how it works and the pros and cons and how to utilize it and what have you. So, but the Retire Japan, I think, did their very first like Retire Japan conference, I think it was, an online conference. And that seemed really interesting, and I wanted to participate. And actually reached out to Ben when we were doing the Clubhouse group, because I had the Tokyo Club, and that was pretty big. I'm like, you know, I was looking to get speakers and stuff to do events on Clubhouse, and I reached out to him, and he's like, oh, you know what? No, I'm not so into that sort of stuff and being on those kind of programs.
This must have been pre-COVID, right?
It was about a year ago. It started this year, actually. Okay. But I think this year he's like been getting into that and doing that stuff. And I noticed he organized the Retire Japan conference, first Retire Japan conference, which I wanted to do, but my kid had a jiu-jitsu tournament on all day. Again, one of these things. But you were one of the speakers. Yep. So I'm very, very curious how was it? I know it was like all online, sort of was it WebEx or what? Tell us about it.
I think it was a Zoom link. It was a really, really good, day. It was almost a full day, I think 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And initially Ben was giving a presentation about just the basics of saving for retirement and personal finance and how to actually just change your mindset. And he mentioned in a previous, we had a chat with him on our podcast the previous week, and with Haley as well, who's helping him market these products to younger generations. And he sort of mentioned, and I think that's very right for a lot of us, that there's no point, you know, for people to actually realize that they need saving or retire for retirement or investing in some way. Usually there's a trigger point, which is usually a pain point, like something actually happens to them. In his case, he lost his job. I know in my case, it was credit card debt, right? Like everybody has a particular point in their life where they suddenly realize they're like, oh shit, I need to do something about that. I need to make sure this doesn't happen again, right? Like, and there's a mindset change there. And we talked about a lot of things during his presentation. And one of the things that he mentioned, which, you know, was not really expanded upon in the conference, but it's because it's not really related to saving and retirement, but one of the ways to have more money when you retire, assuming that you're saving and investing, is to increase your income, right? Like, if you've got more income, then you can also save more and you can invest more. And I think that's a lot of that is what we're doing here, either by, you know, running our own businesses, each of us does that, investing in property, each of us does that. And it was good fun. And following that, we had a presentation from Adam Millerchip, who is helping Ben with creating the Retire Japan Wiki. So a Wikipedia-like database, because the community, as you mentioned, Emil, the community is great. I mean, you get in there, you ask a question, there's so many helpful people who will answer you right away. And you can sort of search through past discussions through the forum and try to find what it is that you're looking for. But a Wikipedia-like database just makes it so much easier for people to contribute data, put it down under categories with certain keywords, links to other articles. So he's working on that, and he was explaining how people can utilize that and contribute to that. And then we had Daniel Mills, who also lives in Japan, but is investing in the USA. He's originally from the USA, and that for various reasons, financing being one of the major ones, he prefers to invest in that market. So he was explaining all about the pros and cons and the ups and downs of investing in real estate in the US. And then I was last, it was really easy for me to sort of segue and you know, bounce back, bounce off whatever he mentioned, and then try to illustrate the differences between investing in the USA, or I should say investing in most Western countries, versus investing in Japan, because the market fundamentals here and the way things are done here are quite different. So I was talking a lot about that, obviously ran over time as I always do. But it was good. It was good fun. There were a lot of questions on all the presentations, I think. And I ended up getting more and more questions following that via email, and people reached out on LinkedIn and so forth as well. At least one new customer already that I'm aware of that heard about us through the conference. So good fun. And obviously content. We love curating more and more content, right? And putting it on the YouTube channel, the podcast, what have you.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, because I saw that. I was really excited. And I thought, you know, this, like, I really wanted to reach out and say, you know, I want to present as well, because I think buying your own home, the way, you know, I've mentioned many times on here, is probably like one of the financially most financial prudent things you can do as a first step. Like, basically the rent you're paying, just that goes into equity growth, right? Yeah. And that's for basically whilst you're living. So yeah, I think that was very, very, like, that would have been very relevant. Just the schedule didn't work out for me. I definitely love what he does. So please do put the link below for the Retire Japan website. I think they get the Facebook group, their forums. And we should try to reach out to Ben and get him. Well, I guess you know him better than I do now.
He's been on the podcast a couple of times already. It'll be good to have him there again.
Okay. But yeah, I guess maybe with this, a real estate sort of chat.
I was going to do detailed interviews with everybody on the panel, but now we're just doing these interviews every week almost. So there's not much of a point of having you on a separate interview. Like, what will we talk about that we haven't already talked about?
True that. I guess I don't listen to your podcast, sorry.
Nothing. Yeah.
You're not Joe Rogan.
Tim Ferriss is my kind of podcast, but that's not really doable in Japan, I think.
Okay. I've got, I guess not really, back to sort of the Airbnb and short-term stays and stuff like that. Recently, I guess my travel plans, I was planning to go to Australia for Christmas time. But with the restrictions on returning to Japan, basically the quarantine requirements at a government facility, when you have kids, I'm like, that's it. I'm going to rule that out.
I could have done a new strain, right? There might be some lockdowns and stuff going down in Australia soon with that new strain coming out.
I feel that they're not going to lock down. I think the government has already said they're not going to lock down domestically, they're not going to go back to lockdown. They've finished with the lockdowns. Most people are vaccinated. They're not going to do that again. Once they're out of lockdown, it's now living with COVID, especially in Melbourne and in Victoria and New South Wales, at least. But the issue rather for me was merely like, when we come back, because of the new strain, we're going to have to do government facility quarantine. For us with kids, it's currently 3 days. If it gets worse, like for Australian returnees, it's 3 days.
You mean in Australia?
No.
Coming back.
In Japan, it's 10 days, isn't it?
No. 3 days. No, they've changed. The rules are changing daily. So, you know, what we're saying today may not be valid tomorrow. It's 3 days in a government hotel that's free of charge and that will include all meals. You don't get a choice of your room. You do not get a choice of your location. They just drop you there, and then you have to continue the rest of the 14. It's now back to a full 14 days from landing. You have to do the rest of that at either at your house if you live, you know, with your family, or if you cannot travel on public transport during that time, and you've got to sign all these agreements.
Okay, so that's still happening, right?
That's still happening, and they've reduced that. You're not allowed to do the 10-day reduction anymore. They've actually scrapped that.
That's even worse now. Okay, yeah. That's a pain, because there's not that many flights going in and out of Fukuoka at the moment. So for me to go anywhere, I'd have to go through Tokyo, and then I'd have to be stuck in Tokyo for 2 weeks.
Precisely.
Yeah.
In an expensive hotel that's got to be not government mandated hotels, but they do have a list of which hotels you can stay at, right?
No, you can come.
Oh, any hotel?
You can come. I do quarantine stays. this is a me putting up my hand. I do plenty of quarantine stays. Okay. So if you're, and I've done that a number of times for people like yourself who live in regional areas, they fly in, they need to stay for 14 days. So we even pick people up from the airport. So
what's the cheapest you can get away with for that sort of
quarantine? See, you're talking to a hardworking small business owner. Asking for the cheapest thing doesn't make my heart sing.
I'm interested in making your heart sing.
Especially
a
little
bit of income for you and a cheap trip for me.
Yeah. Sure. It depends on which property. It depends on which property and depends on and on how long. So yes. I'm really just at the moment, I'm really just trying to look after people. And I've already written off any profit expectations. I'm not expecting to make profits. I really just want to cover my costs. So, and I've got different places. So depending on how many people, depending on the dates, I've got some options. So,
Can it be at business hotel price levels, or is it always going to be more than that? Can like up to like 8,000-9,000 per night, or can it?
I can do that. Yeah. I can do that.
Okay.
Okay. I think it also depends if it's like, you know, Trace also has some houses, right? Yeah. It's a 2-3 bedroom house. Like, you know, that's not, you know, a few thousand yen a night versus a 1 LDK kind of place. But so, but the general rule is, you know, you need to quarantine for 14 days. Day arrival day is day zero. Before, depending on like from coming back from Australia, it was 14 days at home, right? So you take private transport from Narita to like if you're in Tokyo to our house, and then we could have stayed here. And you can go to the supermarket, some essential sort of stuff. But we could have done it with the three kids at home, even though we felt it was a bit tight. But right now, it's if you're coming from Australia, it's 3 days at the government facility first, and then the remainder of the 14 days at home.
At your house, yes.
Or at a you know, wherever, but basically, like one of, if you don't live in Tokyo, maybe one of, you know, an Airbnb type property, right? One of Tracy's places. But because of that hotel quarantine, the government facility quarantine requirement, with kids, it might be like a one room sort of place. I'd have no idea about the size of it.
Yeah.
It's not something we can do. And also, if during the month we're in Australia, we come back and it's changed to like, now I think the UK is 6 days. Or if they change, you have to spend the full 10 days in the facility.
Might happen, yeah.
Yeah. And I heard just this, yeah, like that's too much with the kids. And I heard also this morning, I was reading, like if you're returning from Africa, like some certain African countries, even if you're a resident, this issue they're doing before, even if you're a resident, they're not letting you return, only Japanese citizens, not even permanent resident holders, like which is
that's one of my main concerns. Like if there's suddenly a breakout in the country that I'm going to be traveling to, whether it's Israel or Australia or Thailand, then they could just flip on us and say you're not coming in at all, right?
Precisely, yeah. So that's why we're staying put. And I guess we're going to have a great snow season without any tourists. So making the most of that. But yeah, definitely impacting Tracy with some of the short-term stay.
Yeah.
We were excited for.
I'm still optimistic to say, I'm still, you know, optimistic because like, you know, the news articles that I'm reading, and maybe I'm just looking at an echo chamber, picking the news that I want to read, is that they have been very, very cautious, but all signs are quite positive right now in terms of.
Well, for a hot minute, it actually looked there for like people were actually going to be coming back as soon as January, like the tourists and everyone. But yeah, that's kind of like been put on the back burner again, hasn't it?
That's right.
I think it's might be like another 3 month delay at least until just for this one.
But for people, if you're watching from inside of Japan, the JR rail passes have been opened up.
Yes.
For foreign passports. If you're a foreign person on a foreign passport in Japan, you are able to get JR rail passes at amazing deals. So looks like that for our little family, we could go to Niseko for 5 days or for three days skiing and, you know, 2 days traveling for much less than it would be for than flying. So
does the train go to Hokkaido? I actually mentioned to somebody, really, is there like a bridge or something, a tunnel or under ocean path?
Tunnel goes to Shin Hakodate.
Yeah.
And then you just change to the local line. to go to Kuchan, which is the nearest station to Niseko. Mm-hmm.
I was not aware of that. I actually gave somebody false information. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, so it goes.
That's the Shinkansen now?
That's Hayabusa, yeah.
But what am I mean? You can get to Hokkaido without a flight. You can get to Hokkaido by train only. I was not aware that this was a thing. Thank you.
But this Shinkansen, because I remember a few years ago, I heard that they're building the Shinkansen. So it's actually completed, the Shinkansen from Tokyo that goes through to Hokkaido.
Hakodate, Shin Hakodate. So it goes to Shin Hakodate. Mm. They are extending it to Sapporo, but that's not going to be until 2030. It's a few years away. So yeah, it will be that you can get the Shinkansen from Tokyo to Sapporo in 5 hours or something. So
that's fabulous.
But it will stop at Niseko. So that'll be a real game changer for the people who are coming in on to go skiing, because they usually use train passes, and you know, they'll use their train passes. It'll take the pressure off the road. The road between Sapporo and Niseko is horrendous, and it takes a good 3 hours if it's snowing, and it's dangerous. So this way, it's a much safer way, and you know, much more reliable way. Because if it's a big snowstorm, the trains will go, but the planes stop. And so if you've got accommodation booked in Niseko, you will miss it. Like, you won't get on a plane for another couple of days. This has happened to me before. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to the domestic travel. So.
You notice we haven't spoken. Actually, we haven't said anything about real estate today. Emil, are you okay with all of that?
I am. My issue wasn't focused on real estate as much as, you know, when we just speculate about what the government should do or future government policy. I think that was the stuff I always wanted to stop. But this is, we're talking about more current situation and stuff like that. So I'm happy. I'm happy with that.
But it's lifestyle in Japan, and that you know, when you choose to invest here, it's not just purely for financial reasons. It's a lifestyle investment as well, and these are the things that can really impact your decisions to either come as an investor, or whether that be investing into short term or whether the long term places or, you know, single family homes, whatever. There's a certain lifestyle aspect that doesn't really have necessarily a monetary value, but I think more and more people are really valuing that rather than just the hard numbers. Yeah. Or is it just me?
No, that's absolutely the case.
I think you're correct. But also, very much this is, you know, we talk about real estate and short-term rentals. And look, you know, in terms of the investment side, be it for personal homes or investment side, you know, myself and Ziv, we always get inquiries about, well, what about Minpaku type stuff, Airbnb, short-term stays. And this is, you know, Trey's specialty. So I think just talking about, you know, because I had, I think at the height of Airbnb, I had 12 properties. Now I've got 6 properties that are listed that we do. And some of them now, because of the situation, we're changing them away from Minpaku to regular rental, right? And so that's stuff that this discussion that we're having in terms of the struggles we're having as hosts, as Minpaku, like investors in the Minpaku side of the short-term stay side of stuff, is, I think, important for people to hear as well, because, you know, they think it's just the easy money, like, you know, easy money. I'll just get investment property, put it on Airbnb and make 2 or 3 times.
It is in a lot of countries. It's, I mean, it's a fair assumption to think that it could be similar here.
And it was.
I'll push back a little bit on that. It seems easy money. But to really make the good profits, it's not just putting a couple of curtains up on the walls and four coffee cups and calling it a day. You can really dig in and maximize profits if you are strategic about your marketing, strategic about your design, who's coming in, making sure that, you know, you've got a product that people are willing to spend good money on. Just making a cookie cutter, listing will get you a certain amount of cash, but digging in and really doing some decent marketing and planning on your customer base will allow you to really get much more profits that way. So that's
what you do, Tracy. That's exactly
what
you do.
What I do, well. Yes.
Yeah, no, but what I was trying to say is that in other countries, like in Australia, for example, it is, I mean, it's not as simple as that, but it is pretty much a case of you got a place, you rent it out on Airbnb. You might make a lot of money, you might make a little bit of money, mm-hmm. but all the compliance and legal issues that that Japan, at least since 2018, has put on that, they don't really, I mean, they exist in some places that are maybe suffering from over tourism or have had some issues with, you know, guests getting hurt in properties. So they did put their foot down and legalize it a lot more. But a lot of places around the world are still doable. I mean, you got a place, you rent it out on Airbnb, you make a bit of money, right?
The doors are shutting. In America, they're really going through some massive regulation issues. And there are various community groups, action groups that are for and against, and it's a real battle right now. That some places that was a matter of just put it up, build it, and they will come. Well, that's actually the market's maturing. It's not going to be that way. So
as we speak, I'm just realizing I know somebody who's now working in Singapore as senior management at Airbnb. I think I'm going to try to get him on the podcast. That should be a really interesting person to talk to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you mentioned, Tracy, the market is maturing, the business model, the Airbnb short-term stay business model is maturing. Yeah. And so I think let's remove government regulation and that aspect of it aside, just the product offering. I think when we started in Tokyo, like 2015, I think is when I, 2015 is when I first listed my first houses for Airbnb. I thought I'll just test the waters and stuff. And this was pre-regulation, but also, it's quite new, right? Airbnb is just sort of in the market for maybe a year or 2 years. Like, there's not many properties. That was a time you could just really, anything would just stick. Just because people coming, no one had any expectations. Clients, customers, visitors. It's still quirky and novel. They didn't have a lot of expectation. Hosts would, try, like they'd bend over backwards to a degree. Some were just like trying to profiteer. Like it was really just a mess. Some were doing really great work, some weren't, but customers weren't experienced enough yet, right? A lot of times it was their first stay. But now over the years, I think the visitors are now able to know, like there's lots of reviews. They have an understanding of what their minimum expectation is.
They got more options, right?
Yeah, they have more options, but also there's a bit of a shakeout, like in terms of the hosts. Now hosts that are still doing it, there's no new hosts, brand new hosts. Oh, well, I've got a property. I want to put my room out for Airbnb without knowing. Everyone's quite experienced. If you want to come in new and not know what you're doing, you're going up against people like Tracy, who knows what she's doing, and you hear when she speaks, she knows how she needs to market it, how she needs to take the photos, what additional services she should be offering. And so you come up and you're like, oh, I've just got a room. I'm going to put it up. I've got my place. I'm going to put it up without the right facilities, without it being kid-friendly, or the right sort of internet or pocket Wi-Fi facilities, the right kind of dishes and all that sort of stuff. You're going to struggle. You're really going to struggle. And I think with anything, when it's new, the barrier to entry is so low and customer expectations are so low. Customer expectations aren't there.
And remembering at the time when we first got into it, Emil, there wasn't a lot of opportunities for families to go and stay. That was who the government was really pushing to come in. But then there wasn't a lot of the infrastructure. I mean, the Apple Hotel, for example, as a hotel chain, is fairly new. But there's still all those small business size hotel rooms, which are not family friendly at all. And you being a family guy understand the needs, and so you were able to put together a product instinctively without sort of thinking much about it that was really needed at the time. And that's why you had the ton of success. That's how I also had a ton of success, because it was an instinct, because I was almost the target customer as well, and that was the majority of the people coming in. And I picked up a ton of work as well from people that had gone into a place that, arrived. It was too ghetto, and it was just like they would immediately be checking in and checking out because it was so bad. And then coming to a place like ours.
A few of those in Europe, it was horrible, actually.
Oh, yeah, you check in and it's just like, whoa, okay. So it did settle the, having the regulations, it did settle the market out. You know, if you it got rid of people that were opportunistic, who weren't really serious about hospitality, and left the people who were prepared to jump through the hoops and do it because they, you know, they were doing it as a full-time job. They knew where their bread was buttered and they knew how to look after people to get the maximum amount of money. So
that's what Emil was emphasizing, which I think, which we constantly emphasize to whoever contacts us asking about this kind of thing is, yes, you can make money off it, but this is a job. It's going to be a half-time job, a full-time job. Even if you're hiring a professional like you, Tracy, you need to be communicating with them on a regular basis, making decisions on a regular basis. This is not like a once every couple of years do a renovation and in comes a new tenant, right? It's not a hands-off passive income type of investment.
No, it's not. But you've also got to like it and like, you know, enjoy the lifestyle. And, you know, we've been able to, you know, have a lifestyle where my husband was involved. He was able to give up working in a restaurant. You know, he was a restaurant manager. Hours were awful for, you know, when he's got a family, it's awful. So it suited us in a lot of ways, not just the financial, which was great, but it suited us in a lifestyle sense as well. Yeah, I've just really enjoyed the life.
I'm wondering, Tracy, if you're ever going to be the one to pick up the gauntlet and help us find a management solution for Inaka guest house properties. Like the only thing that people, like if somebody wants, of course, if they buy a big hotel or resort, then obviously they're going to hire staff, they're going to put somebody there, they're going to apply for a hotel license and so forth. But all of the people who want to buy just, you know, their little dream holiday home, you know, maybe 4 or 5 bedrooms, and when they're not there, they do want to rent it out short-term stay, and they're happy to do what it takes, but there's just nobody to service them in those areas, right? Like, how do you solve that? I mean, Niseko's got a lot of management companies, but you know, buying in Niseko is like $500,000 exercise at the least, right?
Yeah, you have to be in an area that actually has the, you know, has the infrastructure. I mean, there are certain things that you can do with remote tablets, but still, you need to have the confidence to have a, you know, boots on the ground. And there's a lot of places where you can't just get to in an hour. Like, you know, it takes 3 or 4 hours to get there if there is a...
Legally, you have to have a person within a certain distance from the property, right?
It's on a case-by-case basis.
It depends on the ward regulation and whatnot. But like, you
each ward's different.
Like, I've lived in Setagaya, and I had one of the early ones was near Tokyo Skytree. So in Tokyo, but like in traffic, it'll take me about an hour or so. Mm-hmm. Just managing that, any issues that arise, having to go there to do something was a complete chore. Whereas, you know, if it's within a 20-minute drive, that's okay. But if it's an hour, like, and because often it's not your primary job, right? You have other sort of stuff. And then all of a sudden, then you've got to sort of just like, oh, I'm going to have this side income, side hustle sort of thing. And then all of a sudden you've got some issue or like, the toilet is blocked, or they have, or you know, it's like a certain recurring issue with this particular property that, you know, like they this guest so often has a problem, or maybe they've just the key issue with the key, they've lost the key, they can't figure out. We had this thing with called Ninja Lock, which was like this the smart lock. I've got like 5 of them now. I'm thinking I've got to sell them, I've got to get rid of them. They functioned okay. They're like the automatic like Bluetooth locks. They go over the regular thumb turn. Mm-hmm. Locks that you have, so you, from inside outside, you can just use a smartphone app and remotely unlock it. And we tried to implement that for guests, so each guest could download the phone app and then use it, but it was just so messy and so clunky to do. We thought just the regular key was easier. But yeah, if like there's a guest who's, you know, an hour away and they're like, the app's not working, and the spare key. Oh, there's a lockbox on the side of the house and that's got the spare key. Here's the code for it. Like, oh, it's not opening. Okay, right. In the car, hike over.
And then you get it in 5 seconds, yeah?
And you go
and
there.
Do you think it's going to be possible for some company to be really smart about it and like set up offices in like prefectural capitals, right? Like have, for example, a small office in Niigata City, and have somebody, just a single person in that office who's going to be servicing the Niigata Airbnb properties or guest houses around there. One for Nagano, there are particular concentrations of areas where these holiday homes are getting a bit more popular.
But maybe it's possible to do that without waiting for them to go up to Niseko level prices and just somehow find a solution.
Yeah.
For
people.
It needs to make, so the cost of having someone clean a property, like manage a property and clean the property, is kind of quite similar wherever the property is. It's more the size of the property, the amount of beds, sheet that needs to be done, etc. Right. But the problem is, if you're in Tokyo, you're or one of these big places, like, you know, more popular areas, you're charging 20, 30, 40,000 yen a night. All right. Whereas if it's further out, it might be 8,000 yen a night. So, but the cost for the cleaning and maintenance stuff is the same. So all of a sudden, the cost of a clean for the property is like a one night, two night stay, plus the cost of cleaning is 50% your stay, right? Whereas here, the cost of cleaning is, it's only 10,000 yen for cleaning. Well, that doesn't really matter what I'm paying, you know, 60,000 yen a night for four nights. 10,000 yen is nothing. When I'm paying 30,000 yen for four nights, and then hold on, another 10,000 yen on top for cleaning, it's no longer attractive.
No, you're right. I feel sorry for them, because there are so many people who have this dream of owning, you know, a holiday home and also renting it out when they're not using it. And we just don't have a solution for them, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, and I think there's most...
I was going to say, it's really on a case-by-case basis, and like, you know, make little hubs of your own, like, you know, find the other hosts in your area and share the resources.
Recognize
that the better organized that you are, the more attractive you get, the more business that you're going to get. You're not going to white out each other's business. It's going to be like that. You're going to have more things for people to choose, and so the pie gets bigger.
Yeah, I don't think it's competition at all. I think it's actually a collaboration. That's actually a really good idea. Like, if there's a bunch of these properties around these parts, then as you know, as a collective, they can hire a single person to take care of them, or they can hire.
Yeah. And see, that's where I would see Airbnb or HomeAway or VRBO or whoever it is. That's where I see that they could be of most use, is to build these community relationships. But they're basically hands off. We provide the platform and that's it. It's like,
they're very hands off.
We're going to bring the Airbnb guy onto the podcast, and we're going to have a chat about that.
Put him on the spot. I do want to hold their feet to the fire. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Airbnb, but I think I would like to push them to be better, because they're missing a massive amount of opportunity. First of all, by not raising the profile of just domestic, the domestic market. Domestic people they just don't choose to go with Airbnb when there's so many advantages of doing that. But it's a mindset thing, and that means that it's up to Airbnb to perhaps sponsor a Netflix show which is local and show how the benefit of local communities. I'd help produce a Netflix show where you go into these local communities and you show that you do some renovations, you show that you're helping other small businesses, and how more people coming into those areas will just help everybody as a collective.
Sounds like it'd be right up Matt's alley as well.
Absolutely, it'd be right up Matt's alley. But I mean, it shouldn't be a foreigner coming in and being on camera. Like, it should not be that. It should be a Netflix series where it's, you know, Japanese communities and doing renovation, it'd be a renovation show, for example, and then how to attract new money into the area by increasing domestic demand and showing the little quirks of the area. I mean, you know,
there are people out there doing that, just need to give them the exposure, right?
Well, they're on YouTube. There are Japanese guys doing that stuff on YouTube, and they're fixing up places and trying to promote places and things. And Matt does it as well. He tries to promote local area, like a lot of his newsletters and his videos and what have you, his Instagram. But I think there's another issue. The other side of it is local residents. Maybe not everyone is happy with.
Having a TV show like that, and actually, you know, I know in my local area, the local yakiniku guy, the local you know, the local yakitori guy, every time I go and, you know, go and eat meals there, I'm not allowed to pay, because they love me so much for bringing in new money and recommending their small businesses, because that's the beauty of a short term, because it's different from a hotel stay. It's a different product. It's a different mindset. People want to understand the DNA of where they're staying. They want to go to the local supermarket. They want to go to the local, you know, they don't just want a bed so that they can get up the next day and go to Disneyland. They want to understand the people who stay in a short-term rental, really want to understand where they're staying, and also they want to be spending their money in the local area. So
local business is a good thing to hit. I mean, it's a sort of a counter punch to the grumpy Jisanbasan.
That's right. Yeah.
Might not like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But the grumpy Jisanbasan next door is not going to be welcoming of it. That's the problem. Like, not everyone is on side with, hey, let's have more strangers come to my local residence, where my home area, my local sure. neighborhood. Businesses, sure. yes, of course. Local residents may not like that. That's what I mean. It's hard to say, oh yeah, this is definitely good for the area, because not all yeah. the area is,
it's case by case again, like you said,
is in agreement that is the best way forward.
But I mean,
I think that's the issue you're putting
in. You're not going to convince the grumpy Ojishamba Obacha. You're never going to convince them. It's the people in the middle who are just unaware of what the, you know, the benefits are that need the educating. Right, the Ojichan, the Obachan, you're never going to convince them, so don't even try. It's education of the middle market.
I mean, you don't have to convince them, but they are residents, and their opinion is still valid.
Absolutely.
If they just don't like someone, like they don't want that change. I mean, that change is not necessarily good for everyone in that area, right? Not everyone is open to that. Not everyone wants it. And problem is, local governments will also like. You say, oh, let's open up, let's get more tourism and stuff. And they say, okay, like when Airbnb, when they first started regulating, okay, the most important thing with the Airbnb regulation is we need to protect the community, protect local residents. So that's why a lot of districts had restrictions of you can't have it during, like you can only have people on weekends or during school holidays, not when kids go to school. They can't interact with these like just people here and there,
there's a reason that Kyoto and Venice and, you know, international hotspots all around the world are having an issue with short-term stays. I mean, they've got a case to make. I'm not saying they don't, but there does need to be a bit more of a balance. And I think Japan is a little bit skewed towards the conservative side here.
It is also the responsibility of the host to be an active host, and to I see my job as a host to be educating my guests on how to be good guests and making sure that they've got, you know, first of all, if you're just looking for a party, if you're just wanting a cheap bed, then I'm not your host, and really you're not, you know, it's not the right fit. But if you're really interested in being a good community member, then it's my job to also, you know, communicate those community concerns and also give you the information that you can use to follow the rules. So it's a delicate balance.
It goes back to like you said, you have to be active, you have to be involved. It's a job, it's a business, it's not a passive thing.
So that's why part of the regulation to register your minpaku property, you have to have, if it's not part of your house, if you're not resident there as a host, you must outsource that task. You must have a contract with a management company, a minpaku management company, like what Tracy
has. I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because they need to have basically registered or licensed host. The hosting company needs to be licensed, because as Tracy said, the host needs to care and needs to have a whole bunch of considerations, so they can't just leave it up to the individuals.
I guess they're also part of the regulation. All created equal, though, right? There are some management companies that, you know, just tick the boxes, and some of them that actually go out of the way to make it work.
Yeah, but they're licensed. But yeah. Like any management company, that is their proper registered business, and they have minimum requirements they need to meet, being reporting, amount of like phone support, etc. So it's not just a hobbyist. It's a proper. To get registered as a host. As a management company is not an easy task. So no individual is just going to do it it may not even be possible for an individual to get it, because you need a certain level of real estate experience, or an employee who's got a certain level of real estate experience in order to get registered as a host. Mm-hmm. So, and because they know just an individual say, oh, I'll be a good host, I promise. They go, well, okay, you got to meet these requirements. And no. So registration to become a host, like a hosting company, is quite challenging as well.
Yeah, and they want all the details. And also it's so that if there are any problems, they know that they can, you know, that they can come and point the finger at someone. They've got someone to blame. So,
Yes,
it's a challenge. But, I mean, look, you know, Japanese regulations are rough, but they're, a lot of other cities are going through that now. And that's been because there's been a lot of hosts that have just been, you know, they've just been what's the word, I've got, I can't remember my English today. No, all the hosts that are just you know, are not involved, are not engaged, and or just let, you know, they're not vetting their guests, they're just letting anyone come in, and it's just like, you know, be careful what you wish for, type of thing, like, you know. But it will sort it out, will sort itself out. I mean, hotels are regulated for a reason, and that's a liabilities thing. So, and the same thing's going to happen. The way I look at it, it's like, well, you know, when cars were first invented, there were no seatbelts, right? But after a few accidents and after a few things happened, they went, oh, okay, well, you know, if we get people to wear seatbelts, then there'll be less problems. Doesn't mean accidents won't still happen, but at least people are not going to die. And that's sort of the same thing with the regulations. It's like, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It just means that there's just an extra layer of protection for everybody in the market, not just, you know, not just the guests, but the hosts and the community. So it's trying to cover all bases.
Okay. I've got to jump off soon.
Yeah.
Sure. Yes.
I do apologize.
Thanks for your time again. And I'll now that we've gotten into this rabbit hole, I'll definitely try to organize somebody from Airbnb to come and have a chat with us. It'd be really interesting, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think there are like little various community groups setting up, but there's not a lot of, I've been to a couple of meetings, but it's not a lot of forward motion. It's just a place for people to have a coffee and have a chat together. It's not a lot of education and forward motion.
And I think I might just use this as a short call to anybody who is watching. If you're somehow related to real estate in Japan, or I would say maybe even in Asia generally, and you'd like to come on the show and give us a bit of a preview or update on what's happening in your market, whether you're in Nagoya, Osaka, or anywhere in Japan that we're not really exposed to normally here on the show, this is an open invitation. So hit us up. We'd love to have you.
And all right.
We'll call it a day. Thanks, guys.
We'll hear about Matt's monkeys next week then, hey?
Yes, hopefully.
Looking forward to it. Good luck with your event as well, Ziv.
Cheers.
See ya.
Bye.
All right, that was a fun chat, wasn't it? Hope you've enjoyed it. And again, if you happen to be listening or watching this before December 8th, you can still sign up for our weekend business networking and board games, card games, strategy games event that's coming up this weekend, 10 to 12 December. Feel free to hop over to the event info and booking page. If you're already registered and attending, can't wait to see you all. And hopefully in a couple of weeks' time, we'll be able to share some footage of the event with you, let you know how it went. Spoiler alert, it's going to be awesome. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. and he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.